I'm here with Justin Brown from IdeaPod. Thank you, Justin, so much for coming. Well, you've come from Bangkok.
Yeah, I've come from Bangkok just to be here with you, Nan. Also to see my family and do a bit of business in Melbourne, but yeah, real pleasure to be here.
You and I have been working together for about, I think, 4 years or something, helping, you know, get IdeaPod off the ground and become the incredible kind of entity that it is today. But before we talk about IdeaPod, where did it all start for you? You're a Melbourne boy, weren't you?
I'm a Melbourne boy. My parents were teachers working in the education system and grew up in Melbourne, the Dandenongs, Townsville for a little while, and then back to Melbourne. So I'm from the Cheltenham, Parkdale area.
And was it a good childhood? Were you sort of like all of us out there sort of windsurfing and on the beach and studying hard?
You know, I'm 36 years old now, so I'm sort of, I think, getting more mature. And I do think back to the foundation that was created with my parents. And something I'm extraordinarily grateful for is, first of all, with my mother. You know my mother very well. She's one of the most determined, stubborn people that I know. And she has risen to executive management positions in the education industry. And I always remember growing up thinking it's so normal for a mother, a female, to actually work in a position of power, to lead teams. And for a good chunk of my childhood, she earned more than my father. And I feel that she was a real inspiration in that sense. And what really strikes me about my mother is her determination. And the other thing is her values of education and learning. So, you know, the inner world that we all experience and how we learn and grow. But what I love about mum is it's never really been about rote learning, learning what other people think. It's very much about, you know, the motivation to learn on your own. And then my father, I've thought about this recently too, given some, you know, business challenges I've experienced in the last year. And I realized that my father's got a lot of integrity. And it's not just having personal integrity, but it's the fact that he's so clear on his values, on looking after people around him, but he doesn't really big note himself. He's extremely humble about it too. And I just feel really fortunate to have grown up in this household with the values of education and learning, with the determination of my mother, you know, really strong woman, and the deep integrity that my father has, where he really does stand up to bullies around him. And I've seen it many times, and he would hate me even saying it. He'll probably be listening one day. He would never big note himself, but he, I really think he's a really strong man. So I just feel really fortunate to have had that beginning from my parents.
And he's a real hard worker too, isn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Your whole family is all of you.
Well, I think that's one of the values is hard work. Is
for,
you know,
sure,
getting ahead and creating something through real discipline, you know, really a real commitment to the job. My father over the previous few years has worked with one of my brothers on an editing and proofreading business. And, you know, he just has just taken that on board and been driving it after he retired as a, you know, he was formerly an assistant principal at a high school. And after retirement, you know, came through and has helped to build this essentially an internet marketing business that builds teams of editors around the world. He's just working all the time and he loves it.
He does. He just loves it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, where you got a lot of your work ethic from.
I think so, yeah. I got a lot of it from definitely my both of my parents. My brothers share these values as well. We often, we work together. Another one of my brothers works with me on IdeaPod and has been with us for 3.5 years.
Yeah, you have two brothers.
Two younger brothers. Mm-hmm. So the immediate youngest, so the middle brother, has the editing business. And then my youngest brother works with me on IdeaPod, and he also has his own blog and a few different things he works on. But also, I went to Melbourne High School.
There you go.
In South Yarra. And the motto of Melbourne High School is honour the work. And I never realised it at the time, but, you know, when you've got kind of a mantra that's repeated over and over, and they keep on telling you that, you know, you're the, it's an academic entrance high school, and they just repeat over and over, you're gifted and you're bright, but you really need to work to achieve something. I never realised it at the time, but I think those values have been instilled in me, and it's something I'm really appreciative of.
It's interesting. So all three of you went to the same school?
No.
Ah.
Two of us went to Melbourne High School.
Yep.
And the youngest brother, Lachlan, went to Cheltenham Secondary College.
Okay. So obviously then it's just in your sort of genetics to be these entrepreneurs. I mean, you know, your parents must be sort of like going, oh, my God, like, how do we do this? We've created three individuals who are all making their own mark.
I think that it's both. My parents would see it as certainly a gift for them that we're so independent, as well as a challenge at the same time, because we're not really following any conventional pathways. And I know that fits with their value system and they're very happy about it.
Mm.
But, it, you know, it would be a big challenge when we're taking a huge amount of risk in our businesses. And, you know, in the case of Ideapod, it's taken a number of years to reach a position of being cash flow positive. And it's a harrowing experience, I think, for loved ones to go through. And people probably don't appreciate it as much. But the loved ones of entrepreneurs, the families of entrepreneurs are really in on the journey too and don't have as much of a choice in the matter.
That is so true. And they have to sort of sit on the sidelines, don't they, and just hope.
Absolutely.
It's probably a little bit easier for some parents to have someone that goes, okay, I'm going to be a lawyer. Now I've got my degree. Now I'm going to go and work for 5 years, you know, and I've got a path written for me.
I think so. And I think that so I'm 36 and people of my generation, our parents grew up in, let's say, the 50s, 60s and 70s.
Mm.
And that was a time of certainly rapid change after the Second World War as the economy grows so fast, but also where I think careers were more entrenched, where you often worked for the one corporation, the one school, the one institution for a much longer period of time. Whereas today the economy's changing so fast and people are, starting to leave corporations behind and work for yourself, become a freelancer, do all of these different things. And things are so in flux that it actually makes sense for our generation to embrace change.
Mm.
And it's very hard for a previous generation to understand why we're, wired the way we are.
Mm.
So back to my childhood, I think the foundation that I was given by my parents is huge in terms of values. And they really helped to create a platform for me to spring off from. And I have not experienced any kind of questioning of my decisions of the entrepreneurial path and all of these different things I've done. And for that, I'm really grateful. And I certainly hope one day, if I ever have kids, that I could help to create a platform where they can be their own person as opposed to who I want them to be.
Well, certainly it's a big energy down here at the Mornington Peninsula, because we have, schools like Cornish, where Emily's going to, and that is all about the same thing. It's about setting up your own values and having an opinion and, not necessarily always saying yes to a particular way if it doesn't feel right.
I think that's really important.
Yeah, questioning the system at times. And obviously Woodley, Woodley's been around a long time, and that is a school that is all about the unique individual.
Mornington's an incredible place. I mean, the natural beauty here as well to grow up in and yet be so accessible to Melbourne and all of this opportunity. I'm sure as a parent you'd be very very happy with this location.
It just allows, again, kids to breathe and to think for themselves. And so I guess, it does sort of lean into wanting to bring up your kids with that kind of, having their own voice and having that drive and that passion within themselves to create their own path, find their talent. And really harness that talent and go for it. And that's exactly what you guys have all done. It's incredible.
Even now, I feel that we've done work together in terms of a healing sense for 4 years. Mm. And it's not even healing. It's more kind of like growth and growing together.
Mm.
And I'm really appreciative of the support. And I do think that we share the same values in that idea that we need to think for ourselves. And that's a big reason we've really attracted towards each other and do different things together. And that's definitely been a big part of my childhood.
Do you think part of the reason why so many more people of your generation and the newer generations coming through, do you think that social media has had a big impact on that kind of, like you said, the freelance, the feeling of being able to work anywhere in the world, that we're smaller now, we can connect with anyone at any time of the day?
I think that social media has the potential to encourage this shift where people are inspired to think for themselves. Unfortunately, I feel we're at a fork in the road where, just like any new communication technology, you end up seeing some big corporations come and take market share. And at the moment, I think 98% of digital advertising is served up by Google and Facebook. If you're going to access the internet, you're either going to go through Google or you're going to go through Facebook. And I don't think it's such a decentralized kind of marketplace for ideas. Mainstream media takes over and really shapes our minds and shapes how we think. And the internet's got the potential to inspire us to think for ourselves, to decentralize, to connect with each other, to create change. And yet, in terms of what I see, I just see more of the same quite often. Mm. I see the emergence of populism politics around the world. And I see a real liberal bias in media outlets like CNN and New York Times, in the same way that I see a right-wing bias with Fox News and Breitbart and other outlets like that. And, you know, things have become so polarized these days. And unfortunately, I don't think social media as it currently stands is really inspiring us to think for ourselves, to question what's going on. But it has the potential to do that. There's a lot of new technology out there like the blockchain and other things like that that can really encourage a shift towards more decentralization. And of course, Ideapod, which I know we'll get to soon,
for sure.
I hope can be part of this shift that, you know, provides the tools so that people can think for themselves.
Wow. Well, let's start with one of your songs. We've got Spirit Bird. Was this something that you felt was something that related to you, or you just loved the sound?
No. Spirit Bird for me is one of the most meaningful songs. It's not even the words themselves, but I feel Xavier Rudd, the artist, is so connected to the land of Australia and the southeast of Australia that whenever I hear it, I almost can just feel the spirit of Australia coming through me, which sounds a little wacky, but I just love it.
Well, let's have a listen. Oh, that was beautiful, Spirit Bird. And I'm sitting here chatting to Justin Brown from Ideapod. Justin and I, like we said, have been working together for quite some time, having a great time building Ideapod and working on both of our journeys. And he's a local boy. He comes from Melbourne and is a wonderful entrepreneur. I think his mum and dad have produced three of them. Now, obviously, before you started Ideapod, you're out there studying. You got to university, yeah? And what were you doing? Were you doing PhD or Masters?
Well, I've often referred to myself as one of the most overly educated entrepreneurs there is.
Mm-hmm.
I did a Master's degree in International Politics at the Australian National University, and then I came back to Melbourne and I tutored in International Politics at La Trobe, Deakin and Melbourne University, and that was where I first got a taste for teaching people, leading groups. And after that, I was fortunate to be awarded a fellowship to study in Europe for 2 years, to get two more master's degrees, so that made it three. And I had a fellowship which funded my living expenses. I spent 1 year in Poland, in Wrocław, which is the west of Poland. That was in 2006. And then I spent 1 year at the London School of Economics, and I did a degree in economic history, which certainly helped to provide a bit of a foundation in understanding, I think, the way economies work, but in a historical context, seeing China very much as the center of the global economy up until the Industrial Revolution. But I also learned a lot about the role that technology can play in drastically increasing living standards around the world, as we had, you know, the emergence of industrialization around the world. So I learned a lot there. I was really fortunate to have that opportunity. After that, I had a girlfriend, and she got a job with Deloitte in Dusseldorf. So I had a decision. I knew I wanted to do a PhD eventually, so I could either move back to Australia or stay in Europe and, you know, try to get a job. And that was a really challenging decision because I felt the calling to come back home and kind of build things up from Australia. But I ended up getting a job with a management consultancy in London, kind of a boutique consultancy. And I took the job, and they said, well, you know, our projects are in Kazakhstan and Russia and Mozambique and other places.
Wow.
So you can live in Germany with your girlfriend and travel to London regularly and, you know, keep on going. So I took the job. I worked with them for a couple of years. I worked on a large... This was during the financial crisis. So I worked with a project with Citigroup where they were downsizing really significantly, and I was helping with that restructure. And then I worked on a project in Mozambique with a mineral sands company right on the coast. I learned an incredible amount. I mean, I was there for 28 days, then back in Germany for 2 weeks, and just back and forth for 6 months. And I just learned so much from seeing firsthand different communities around the world, and, you know, a real disparity in living standards. And it was in my face, and it was challenging because having a mind there would it showed, you know, the potential to really revamp an economy and to build infrastructure and the mine build schools, and yet it brought all these problems of prostitution in the region, alcoholism. It was so polarized. And I remember very clearly thinking, well, I don't really know the answer. And I started to write emails to different thinkers around the world. I wrote an email to Noam Chomsky, who's my hero, and he graciously wrote back. And I was trying to figure out what was going on, and I decided that... and then after that, I did a project in Siberia, in the Arctic, with an underground coal mine. So I was there for 3 months, and that was an extraordinary experience. But I knew that management consulting wasn't for me.
Right.
I wasn't inspired by the work I was doing. I felt extraordinarily frustrated, so I decided to start applying for PhD programs. And very fortunately... got into a doctoral research program studying the geopolitics of finance. And I started that PhD thinking that this would be the answer, that my mind was finally free. And what I discovered was that my mind certainly wasn't free, that academia is... ideas don't really flow freely. I mean, the incentives for academics are very much to write for a defined audience and publish in peer-reviewed journals. And the knowledge that academics create that's often publicly funded just doesn't reach the public who are funding the research in the first place. And academics are kind of talking to each other in echo chambers.
Right.
And so I was really, really frustrated with that. So I, you know, at the beginning of the PhD program, I created a website which was called Research Nexus at the time. And that was where I published my own working papers I was writing on very diverse interests, like the relationship between new findings in cognitive science, as it related to psychoanalytic philosophy, as it related to politics, and just, you know, crazy essays. But I had no place for them. I didn't know what to do with them. I couldn't share them on Facebook or Twitter or places like that, because who would understand me? So I built the website myself, and initially from my own working papers, and then with the help of a friend, turned it into a social network so other people could create their own working papers and share them and build a community. And
interesting.
That was the beginning of IdeaPod.
IdeaPod. There it was.
Yeah.
Right there. So was that in a period where blogging was all happening, or was that before blogging?
Oh, no. Blogging was a big deal. Certainly back then. But the even now, it's really hard to get started as a blogger. I mean, you can use a platform like Medium, just medium.com. It's very easy to start blogging. But usually what you need to do is... use a content management system called WordPress. Register a domain, purchase a server, optimize the website, and then you create your blog, and then no one's there. There's no one actually reading your blog, and you have to start marketing it yourself. So I don't think the problem of blogging has really been solved even today. And so IdeaPod has aimed to make it the easiest place on the web to actually get an idea out of your head and in front of a community of people that will actually help you build upon the idea.
It's so true. So easy.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the communication revolution we're living in right now, which is that with the mobile phone in my hand, I've got the ability to reach literally billions of people right now with something that can go viral. And that's so profound. I mean, the contraction of time and space is absolutely remarkable. And yet the communication platforms that we use, I think, are just not so well suited to the expression of ideas, to capturing ideas, to connecting people based on shared ideas, as opposed to a shared professional network, shared friends, and other kinds of social networks that are out there.
It's funny because Kat Dunn, which we had on a couple of weeks ago, who also works with IdeaPod, she's a CEO, but, you know, we were talking about the fact that it's a big change, isn't it, from a generational point of view, because not so long ago it was about actually keeping your ideas to yourself, wasn't it, and to be seen but not heard, and, you know, and keep your head down and, you know, just do your job. And anyone that wanted to be a little bit outside of that was actually, you know, risking themselves and possibly risking their own income and, you know, all those sort of things. Whereas now it's the new generation coming through oozing all these, you know, ideas and want to really break the shackles of that oppression. So they, like you say, they're putting their ideas out, but if no one's reading them, it's soul destroying, in fact.
I know, yeah. One of the great questions I like to ask people is, what's something that you believe to be true today that not many people around you believe to be true? And that just brings out the most amazing ideas. And if you think back in history, let's go back to the 19th century, if you were to ask people that, you might have a few people starting to say, well, I think that slavery just is not right. I don't really have the words for it because it's so normal that we live in this kind of system where we make people slaves, yet it doesn't feel right to me. And if you can imagine that those ideas could never be expressed, then we would never have a social movement that ends up, you know, replacing a system of slavery with equal rights, at least in that sense. And so, you know, what are the ideas today that are sitting inside people's heads that are trapped? They just can't quite get out there, and they just feel, you know, there's injustice in the system right now. You know, like some simple ideas could be something like maybe animals deserve rights in our legal framework, because right now they don't, and we create industrial factory farms in producing meat and getting meat onto our plates, and that's kind of crazy when you think about it. There could, I mean, there'd be so many more kinds of ideas that are trapped right now. So the more we can, I think, open up people's minds and create a culture where sharing wacky ideas is actually not only tolerated but encouraged, I think we can accelerate the rates of change in society. And I feel when you look at the state of the world today, we need that kind of acceleration.
Well, this is, you know, evolution, isn't it? So IdeaPod's really creating that platform, is it, for the new generation to evolve how they want to evolve?
I think so, yeah. And it's, you know, there's a few key pieces to IdeaPod. So, you know, we speak about, you know, five years ago when I was doing the PhD, and it was a platform for everyone to share their ideas. And, you know, we've gone through a really big journey raising quite a lot of investment money, building up a user base, building up a very influential group of people that support IdeaPod and share the ideas. And then late last year, we created a blog called The Power of Ideas. And I know Kat mentioned it on the show last week.
Yeah.
And that has just taken off. And that's where we've created a team of writers that provide commentary on the ideas shaping our future. So it's more than just a social network where everyone can come and share their own ideas. We've actually created a digital media platform that is reaching, I mean, literally millions of people. And some of the ideas are pretty, you know, pretty out there that we actually write and that we get a lot of traction for. And we're drawing off the ideas that people are sharing. And yeah, I think it's, I think it's important we create these media platforms that help inspire people to think a little differently.
People are voting with their feet. I mean, you've had sort of 7 million people, you know, get involved in this. So, you know, the foot traffic's there.
Yeah, the traffic's there, and it's it's growing. It's a lot of work. Gets back to the values of hard work that I'm fortunate to have, you know, received from my parents. And my brother Lachlan's been a key part of the digital media side of IdeaPod. And yeah, we're just working really hard and just trying to get better and better at creating content that inspires people and encourages people to think a little differently.
Oh, there's more to hear on this story. All right, so we want to just put another song in here, which is Fever to the Form. So this is another one of your favourites.
Absolutely.
Here we go. There it is, Fever to the Form. We're sitting here talking to Justin Brown about IdeaPod, his little baby that he set up with a bit of a team around him. And now, of course, you know, there's a lot of IdeaPod that's going out viral, and a lot of people are voting with their feet and getting involved. And the core of IdeaPod, would you believe, is about getting people's ideas out there. And as we said before, you know, the old generation was all about, you know, keeping your ideas to yourself, you know, and also with patents and things, wasn't it? It was always about hiding your ideas. But this new system of exploring and sharing is allowing people to, you know, put their ideas out no matter how silly they are or how amazing they are, and find other connections and people out there in the world that actually can support them with their idea.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
It's really exciting. It's been wonderful to actually create a platform, an idea sharing platform, and realize that not only would people use it, but that it would even change a few lives along the way. And we've got some, you know, great stories of people that have met up on IdeaPod, have created businesses, you know, romance has developed. But I think the most important thing for me is real perspective shifts as people share ideas and learn a lot about themselves through the process of actually sharing ideas, sharing their own ideas. And that does create that kind of impetus for change, I think, in someone's life.
Wasn't there something that you just got involved with which was instrumental through IdeaPod, and that was to do with some system where if someone's in an emergency, they can say something and The phone will actually acknowledge that and call emergency services.
Yeah, that's a great story. So Kat Dunn was on the show last week. She has spearheaded a new engagement with the Commonwealth Bank Innovation Lab. And it's extraordinary because they've used Ideapod to crowdsource new ideas for new kinds of social business models, which they're now committing to actually help build. So we ran a challenge over 5 weeks. We had what we call an online salon, which is basically a webinar. Halfway through, we brought together thought leaders and we started looking at the ideas being shared on ideapod.com. We discussed it halfway through, went back to the community. More and more ideas got shared, and there's been now a winning idea, which, as you say, is the idea is by Terry Sidhu, and it's an app that helps victims of domestic abuse. So you pre-program with your voice a few calls for help, and the app is always listening so that if you are ever a victim again, it knows how to recognize the tone and pitch of your voice, and it automatically calls for help. And we'll also call loved ones to say that this person's in need of someone to come and visit right now.
Unbelievable.
And it's an incredible idea. And that's really, you know, for me, first of all, it's an amazing idea that needs to be built. But secondly, it's something I'm really proud of, that Ideapod's played a role in actually surfacing this idea. And a big bank in Sydney has actually
recognized that
to building it, you know. And I feel that in this day and age, in the 21st century, the businesses that are going to survive and thrive are the ones that are not only going to listen to the public and their users in your online feedback forums, but are actually going to co-create with the people in a revolution of human thought. I don't think we need to see this massive human revolution where we take over the institutions of power. But rather, I think it's more of the age of the feminine, where it's more of an evolution as institutions start to listen to people more and more, but we co-create. Because I think that institutions can be so powerful and have so many resources and so much knowledge buried within them that when they open that up to new ideas from the outside and start to create that kind of change, then I think that's what the world needs more of. So I'm really proud that Ideapod has managed to partner with the Commonwealth Bank Innovation Lab to surface this idea and now get ready to turn it into reality.
That is just the beginning, isn't it, hey?
Yeah, it's really amazing. So it's stories like that that definitely make me feel just wonderful for having played a role in creating a platform that does surface these kinds of ideas.
But also, how much is that going to help people?
Yeah.
Particularly, you know, people in domestic violence where, you know, they have to be careful about how they seek help.
Yeah. Well, what matters, I think, is that the best ideas come from people at the coalface on the production lines who are actually dealing with users and community. So in this case, Terry Sidhu, he grew up in a household where his mother helped people that were victims of domestic abuse. So, you know, he's got that experiential knowledge, and you can't really just have the best ideas coming from the executives, from people at the top, but the best ideas really do come from people on the front lines. And that's, I think, one of the key things I've learned with Ideapod. It's that the best ideas aren't really from the biggest thinkers and the most well-renowned people in the world, the people with the best degrees or the best job titles or the best credentials. Actually, the best ideas come from you, the person listening. And an idea can seem a little crazy at first. It can seem a little trivial. It can seem funny. But those ideas are often the ones that really do create the ripple of change that leads to really positive outcomes for society.
I believe we're all connected in some way. And I feel that we're all here for each other at some level. And it's amazing to think that Ideapod can be, you know, that hub the salon for those people where you put out an idea and those other people that inspires them or ignites something in them so they can be the best they can be. It's a bit like pyramid selling, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And then that continues sort of, you know, down the pyramid where then, like you say, it gets to ground zero and actually, you know, creates some change, creates something real. What a wonderful place, I feel, particularly for all our right brainers out there who, you know, have these ingenious ideas but possibly need that little bit of reassurance and a little bit of that help and support to actually get their ideas grounded.
Well, this I'm glad you mentioned that because it gets back to a key insight I feel I've experienced in the Ideapod journey, where I began Ideapod very much needing to be in control. And I knew the best way for this to happen, the best way for this to be created, and I would communicate it top down to the investors, to the team members, and say, look, we just need to do this and everything's going to be fine. My big learning is in the power of decentralized thinking and collective intelligence, the power of community, the power of a tribe or a group, where we're actually very diverse and we're all so unique in our own way, and no one's like me out there, and I have very unique talents. And when I'm, you know, connected to myself and I'm feeling powerful in some way, kind of connected to my inner power, then I'm expressing myself the way I should. And it's going to be so different to you, Nan. You've got extraordinarily different skills. And that's why when we come together, we work well together. And I can get the benefit of your many years of experience and talents and, you know, go through some incredible insights. And I think that's really powerful. So I started off trying to change the world, thinking I knew what could happen. And I feel this is indicative of the problems we face in the modern day, which is that you get we place too much faith in our politicians, in our corporate leaders, in the United Nations, in these frameworks. And they're really important and we can't reject them. We need to work with them. But I do feel that decentralized thinking is so much more intelligent, and we need to learn from nature, which is that actually there's nothing in control, and yet nature always gets everything done, not only perfectly, but beautifully, majestically, just wonderfully. And it's the same with ideas. When you can create a culture where people's ideas are valued and ideas move from the bottom to the top, I guess part of a shift as we restructure society.
Amazing. And I think the public are ready for that now. I think, you know, the everyday person wants to know the truth. And that means that we need to be open to many different sides of any story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that's also part of something we're creating. We've created a new product called the Filter Bubble Buster. So maybe some of the listeners would know of the idea of a filter bubble or an echo chamber, but certainly we've all come across the term fake news. And the idea is that when we use social media and Google and other platforms like that, algorithms showing certain information to us based on how we've already been using the web or the kinds of people we interact with on Facebook. And Facebook knows that, you know, if I'm someone who is, let's say, left wing, then I will not interact with the right wing posts as much. And over time, I'll only be shown content from a left wing perspective. And it's the same for the right wing people. And I end up being trapped in a filter bubble and I'm not exposed to diverse perspectives. So something we've built at IdeaPod, which is one of the tools that we bring to help enable, I guess, inner growth and learning, is a filter bubble buster. So we're trawling the web for content that lives inside multiple echo chambers. And what that means is that we're starting to pull out the articles about, for example, Donald Trump, that are shared just as much by right-wing people as by left-wing people, which means that unique bit of content now has a lot of value. It's not polarized. It's not the diverse perspective. It's something that somehow breaks through the paradigm and can help people to just, you know, grow and learn about Donald Trump from maybe a more detached perspective. So, you know, content that actually lives outside the filter bubbles. So, yeah, I think the polarization of the media right now is a major challenge we're going through. And to help people to, you know, provide the tools to learn to think for yourself is something that I think is really important.
It's just incredible. I mean, we've all been in this position where we kind of get what you're saying, but we didn't know there was a different way. And that's what you're doing, is you're giving us an opportunity to do it differently.
Yeah, I think we're trying to play a role in that. But I think there's so many different platforms and entrepreneurs and ideas and everything out there that is part of this massive wave of change. As you say, the younger generation kind of grew up. I think there's a culture shift where younger people do know to think for themselves more and more. There's a lot of work still to be done, but I think there are a lot of platforms like IdeaPod out there. We're one of many digital media platforms that's seeking to, you know, I guess, break up mainstream media in some way and provide an alternative. And, you know, I'm really happy that there's so much more out there as well.
Amazing. Hey, appropriate song now, Lost in the Light. So here we go. There we go, Lost in the Light, and I'm sitting here with Justin Brown from IdeaPod, and we're talking all things IdeaPod. We've been chatting about the fact that he's simply a Melbourne boy who really had a bit of an entrepreneurial side all the way through. He studied extensively, And also travelled through as a management consultant all the way through the world, including Siberia, but could see things in the world that really didn't sit very well for him, and decided it was time to get those ideas out there, his own research papers and things like that, and finding that that information wasn't getting to the general public, and how could we actually make that happen, and that's how IdeaPod was born. Is that right?
That's right.
Is that right in a nutshell?
You've absolutely nailed it now. That's the beginning of IdeaPod.
Mm. So we've been chatting about the fact also, though, that IdeaPod's becoming more and more increasingly important for the general community, not only for sharing their ideas and connecting and creating brilliance out there, but it's also about the fact that it's turning into something where people want to know the truth. And we're tired of, hearing these stories and wondering whether they are stories that we've been fed, or whether they're actually, important stories for us to know. How's IdeaPod going to help with that?
So we've built effectively an online newspaper for ideas, for new ideas, for alternative ways of thinking, for rethinking different world issues or relationships or what's normal or what's not. And we do have a team of editors that create a lot of content. So for anyone out there that would like to, have a read, it's really the first way to be touched by IdeaPod is to check out our blog, which is at thepowerofideas.com. It's mm-hmm. going to redirect you to the key part of the website where we've built the blog. Mm-hmm. And please share your email address when there's a pop-up, and then you're part of IdeaPod. That's the first step. If you're inspired to share your own ideas, then go to ideapod.com and create a profile and just get that first idea out of your head. It can be anything that's on your mind. It can be things that happened to you that day. It can be questioning what's going on in your local community. It can be poetry. It can be about meditation. It can be about the inner world as well as the outer world. It doesn't matter. IdeaPod's for every kind of idea. So you can come in and share your idea and just see what happens. And
so is that actually sort of, typing that out, or is that also just sort of, walking along? And I know this new generation, they're happy with just literally sort of filming themselves and uploading it as they're walking down the park, or, taking the dog to the beach, or, it seems to be very, very much embryonic, and you sort of go with the flow.
Yeah, so it's a website. So you go to ideapod.com, mm-hmm. you do posts limited to 1,000 characters, which is... similar to Twitter having 140 characters, mm-hmm. so a little longer, a little more substance. We also have an app in the App Store for iPhones, which is for capturing your ideas in 40-second video. So it's kind of like an idea journal in a way. And that's mm-hmm. where you can save ideas for yourself. Whenever you have an idea, you open it, you capture your idea. And then if you want to get feedback from a community, you can share it from the app out onto the website. We've got a few more tools coming soon to help capture ideas and organize ideas and, connect with others. But for now, it's a very simple platform to share your ideas. And then we've got the blog, which is what's driving the huge amount of traffic right now. And IdeaPod's going through a bit of a restructure at the moment where it's going to be more of an online newspaper with a really important forum for people to share their ideas.
Fantastic. Okay. And then what about corporates, if they were interested in being a part of that saloon idea?
Yeah, well, the Commonwealth Bank Innovation Lab, of course, were very bold in trying something new. And we are very interested to explore other corporations, startups, businesses, whatever it may be, that are inspired by this movement, that want to crowdsource ideas and create positive change. If you're interested in finding out more about that, please send an email to Kat Dunn, who was on last week, which is kat@ideapod.com, and she's leading that charge.
Fantastic. It's that easy.
It's pretty simple.
Well, fantastic. So all we need to do is, get connected and put that email in, and then you're a part of it.
And go to Facebook and type in IdeaPod in the search bar. And follow us on Facebook. That's where we share a lot of our content, and hopefully we'll help to uplift your Facebook news feed with alternative perspectives.
Sounds fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time, Justin.
Thank you, Nan. I really, really appreciate the opportunity to come and share some of this story with your listeners.
Yeah, it's just always lovely being in your company, and it's been a great way to spend the morning. So, well, we look forward to maybe having you on again down the track to see what's next for IdeaPod.
I'd be delighted. Thank you so much.
Okay.